Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Terrace Martin, a musician and producer, was born in Los Angeles's Crenshaw District. He first started in music as a saxophonist. He played in jazz bands, went to an arts high school, he even went to band camp. He wasn't much older than 18 when he figured out that life wasn't for him. At the same time, the kids growing up around him were freestyling and making mixtapes and beats. And who wouldn't be excited about that? With those two parallel backgrounds, Terrace kicked off a career that would make him a trailblazing polymath in popular music. As a producer, he's worked with Snoop Dogg, Charlie Wilson, YG, Kendrick Lamar. As a solo artist, he's released about half a dozen albums. Terrace channels classic artists like Sly Stone, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, and Herbie Hancock, while also landing some pretty great features. Heavy hitters like Kamasi Washington, Thundercat, Wiz Khalifa, and the aforementioned K-Dot. Terrace isn't the kind of guy to be slowed down by anything, including a pandemic. In 2020, he released 7 EPs, including Village Days, a record that features a jazz tribute to the late Nipsey Hussle. When I interviewed Terrace Martin in 2017, he just released a record with his band, The Polyseeds. It's called The Sounds of Crenshaw, Volume 1. Here's a little bit from it, an instrumental called Funny How Time Flies. Terrace Martin, welcome to Bullseye. I'm thrilled to have you on the show.
Man, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
You're really emphatic about blurring the lines in music, not creating boxes in music. Do you think of yourself as a hip-hop producer or as a jazz musician?
I think of myself as a few different things, but how I like to explain that is... I don't think of myself as any one particular musician. My foundation is hip hop music. After hip hop, I discovered jazz. So those are my foundation things, and those are always my point of directions for most of my influence and most of the records I do. I always could find a certain energy in my point of direction, which is hip hop or jazz. That's why I'm in my CD player right now. It's anywhere from Sonny Stitt to Dexter Gordon to Too Short to Irk the Jerk, to N.W.A., to Joni Mitchell. It is hard to define the kind of guy I am because of my foundation are made up of things that are gumballs of other things, you know. So, you know, I think right now I am a musician, and I'm a producer of many things, records and children.
I appreciate, by the way, you throwing the yay in there a little bit. I know you're pandering to me, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
Hey, look, you know, I wrote a song called Oakland on my last record. People would tell you, I would live in West Oakland if I could right now. I can't because every day I'm so involved with pushing this LA thing to the next level.
Let's talk about the gap between hip-hop and jazz music. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a legacy of people connecting hip-hop and jazz, mm-hmm. but it's mostly been by, like, inviting one jazz musician to play a solo on a hip-hop record. Mm-hmm. Or it's been super corny. Mm-hmm. What do you see as being the things they share, and what do you see as the things that are different?
I think, number one, both jazz and if we're just classifying, put them in these things, both jazz and hip hop both come from black people. And they both come some of the foundation of struggle and happiness and just living. We all go through a lot of the same, and all these songs are usually written from somebody's perspective or somebody's what they went through. You know, you listen to Miles Davis in the midst, like live at the Plug Nickel, and he's playing Milestones and so intense, and it's Tony Williams hitting all those slick polyrhythms on the drums, Ron Carter, all that harmony, Herbie Hancock playing intense. You got to understand what was going on outside while they were playing that music. Black folks was getting swarmed with water hoses, beat, killed everything. This is the 60s. That music was a reflection of what the hell was going on outside. Hip hop, you listen to the Police by N.W.A. That music is nothing more but another reflection from what's going outside. The difference is there's no instruments in these young black man's hands. It's microphones and turntables. When I think of corny jazz, and this is no disrespect for anybody out there getting their money in the school system, the universities that's teaching jazz. But when jazz got institutionalized, that's what made this corny. When you start having to go to a classroom, and that's beautiful to learn the harmony and everything, but when you have kids that's coming from all these different places, which it is for everybody, but now you have a kid that he may not have went to the struggle because Hank Mobley did, but now he could transcribe a Hank Mobley solo, and now he could be accepted for playing a Hank Mobley solo on a gig. You dig what I'm saying? That's corny to me. Sounding like somebody else is corny. So when jazz got institutionalized, the motherfuckers started waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning studying this shit and breaking down this shit, and they ain't sacrificed this shit. They ain't went through nothing, which is cool. The music is for everybody, but the art of doing it comes from something else, period. And I'm a kid that's grew up in a jazz household and everything. So I know, you know. When you grow up playing jazz, you live in hotels sometimes. Your family has no money sometimes because you're playing jazz. When you grow up with a hip-hop dream, you live up growing up because sometimes your family has no money, but you have a dream in hip-hop. What's the difference? Is it drums and jazz? Is it a struggle in jazz? Is it drums and hip-hop? Struggle in hip-hop? It's struggle in both of these things, so how dare somebody separate these things, especially from a person that lived both angles of the and realize it's no difference. And I wish it was, because maybe I was taught if I just play jazz sometime and smile, maybe I'll play in the Lincoln Center Jazz Band one day and get a job and wear a suit and tie every motherfucking day of my fucking life. Or maybe I'll do hip hop and get a big car and a big chain and fuck all the bad and get my family out the ghetto. It's both me trying to get stability. So what's the difference? So that's why I don't blur lines in jazz and hip hop.
I want to play one of the first hip hop production credits that you've got. It's from the 213 album. That's Snoop Dogg, Nate Dogg, and Warren G.
Joystick.
Yeah, it's called Joystick.
She said she wants to ride my joystick. She act like she wanna ride my joystick.
Got it locked when it comes to females. Y'all still buying at retail. It's a gift that keeps giving to all. Like that little country off the day ago.
Sort of sweet tempered verse there. was that the first time you got your name on a record?
Yeah, as a producer, yes. As a producer without behind somebody else and being the secret guy, yes.
And you were working with Battle Cat at the time?
Yeah, a lot. Studying with him and living at his house. He was teaching me a lot, man. He's
a sort of, for folks who don't know, like a really legendary LA G-Funk producer.
Yes, yes.
Probably underappreciated outside of California.
Yes, but his sound is in everything I do today. He's like a Duke Ellington in my world, you know. I didn't give that beat to Snoop. I think I gave that beat to Warren. And Warren was working with Nate a whole lot, and I had just got with Nate too, so I was working with Nate a whole lot, and catching the bus out to his house in Woodland Hills. And they would go, we would, from Woodland Hills, go to Irvine, where Warren G's studio was. And that's a long drive, Irvine. And they did that. They did Joystick. And I remember Warren calling and saying, yo, we got one. You know, we're going to use Joystick for the 213 record. And I was like, what? What? It was Joystick. Another one I did for Warren record called PYT. Him, Snoop, and Nate, and it was three of them they did. That's the one that made it, but I remember that. That was a huge feeling. And I was on the road with Snoop when it came out. I remember we was in Wichita, Kansas.
Were you playing with his band?
I was playing with his band, and we was in Wichita, Kansas, and I remember going to the CD store and spending all my per diem on, like, five of the CDs and just just kept looking at them like, wow, how did I get from here to a CD, you know? That was big for me because I was like, people... Oh no, I mean, they said my name on the radio. I remember that felt more, just saying my name felt, I felt so appreciated, you know. I felt like 20-something years at that point was struggle, was over, like, and it was. That was a monumental time. That was like, I'm a producer, and I have a credit. I could do this, you know.
L.A. has this musical tradition. I mean, you're about the same age I am. Mm-hmm. When you were a kid, it was the blossoming of LA hip hop. Like, mm-hmm. you lived in the heart of that. Like, when you were a kid was when it started, when you were a teenager was when it blossomed.
Mm-hmm. I came up at a time when it was only me. I didn't have any peers in LA doing what I was doing. So sometimes it looked strange when I had a horn or something like that. So I had to put it up a little bit. I had to mask the horn because I was around environments that would see a saxophone and automatically think, what would they think? What would they think? What's the word we keep flying? Jazz, right?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Or maybe even corny.
Or maybe even corny, yes. I got to take him on the road and just do these on the road. Maybe even corny. So the horn in hip hop at a time when I was coming up, it just wouldn't look cool. And looking cool is how you stayed around, looking cool. Who had the most beautiful woman, who had the new Jordans, who had on the Issey Miyake cologne, or Curve, for all my players out there. The saxophone thing was accepted more in the Leimert Park area because that was the jazz area of LA. And it was a few cats that dug it, but when I went to go, you know, because, I mean, I got my name around LA for carrying around a drum machine before it was internet. It was like a jam session. Like, I had to carry around a drum machine or go to somebody's neighborhood that had a studio and do beats in front of everybody on the spot and let them know Terrace Martin ain't around from the West Side with my drum sounds that Battle Cat gave me. And I sampled all my old DJ Quick drum sounds. I'm coming to your neighborhood, Blood, Crip, SA, whatever. I'm banging out this beat and I'm gonna build my reputation around LA.
What kind of drum machine were you traveling with?
What, an MPC 3000? What, with fully blown memory and internal zip drive by Bruce Forat? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
If anything cracked off with the horn and where I was trying to go get my rep on for my music, I was in gang banging. I didn't grow up doing music in the conservatory. All my friends didn't do music. All my friends gang bang. So my thing was making them move, so I couldn't have my horn with me because we may have to run.
More of my conversation with Terrace Martin after a quick break. Coming up, it turns out that Terrace Googled our show before he agreed to come on it, and I guess he liked what he found. I mean, he came. It's Bullseye for MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but, like, also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks every week. Myself, and I'm Morgan Rhodes, and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talking about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Are you ready to take your career to the next level? Well, LifeKit's here to be your career counselor. All this week, we'll have episodes to help you plan your next career move. We'll give our best tips for asking for a raise, finding a mentor, switching careers, and much more. Listen now to the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Taris Martin. He and I spoke in 2017. Martin is a producer, a saxophone player, a rapper, and a composer. He's collaborated with Kendrick Lamar, Snoop Dogg, Stevie Wonder, and many others. The last 6 months or so have seen Taris release a torrent of music, including a solo EP this past December and a collaborative record with Robert Glasper and Kamasi Washington called Dinner Party. Here's a song from that album. This one's called Freeze Tag, and it features Chicago producer Felix behind the mic.
They told me to put my hands up and have my head. I think they got the wrong one. I'm sick and tired of running. I've been searching for the love went. I've been looking for the dove, and they told me if I move, they gon' shoot me dead.
I want to play a record that you produced, I guess, now last year for YG. Mm-hmm. It was a big single from his last record called Twist My Finger.
Cool.
You should have seen how I pulled up in the ride, in the ride, in the ride. Got two mother wanna fight me outside, fight me outside, fight me outside. You should have seen how I pulled up in the ride.
Tell you what, Taris, that rattles the door panels in my car.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
That's a heavy record. I mean, that feels like it could have been produced by Battle Cat.
Mm-hmm.
That's that same heavy electronic funk sound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think that in the last couple of years, you've spent a lot of your time working with two of LA's greatest rappers.
Mm-hmm.
You've worked a bunch with Kendrick Lamar. You're frankly one of the greatest rappers of all time, but a guy who is, you know, what we used to call super lyrical, right? And YG, who is the plainest rapper. I mean, I've been listening to the YG's record over and over and over and over. I really love it. And one of the things that's amazing about it is how plain and simple his lyrics are and how powerful they are from that simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not simplicity as a put down, you know, relative to, not because he's incapable of complexity, but because he is choosing a kind of clear, defined power.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about Kendrick, who made, you know, Into Pimp a Butterfly, which you worked on extensively,
mm-hmm.
one of the most sort of dense and complex hip-hop records, of the successful hip-hop records since Public Enemy, aesthetically, like a really, a richly intertwined record, a record where there's so many sounds and so many things going on. And those are such distant poles, but they come together specifically in what I hear from you in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
that like this isn't, both of these are an LA thing. Like these are about this place and people from this place.
Mm-hmm. If you think about history in LA, most artists, the real bad mother come from Watts and Compton. You know, from Charles Mingus to Eric Dolphy and on, you know, to
Charles Wright.
Yeah, Charles. I mean, you know, it goes on and goes on. So Compton's one of the last cities in LA where a lot of people over there leave their doors open still. Now the news will tell you some other, and it goes down. But Compton's one of the only places I've been that I felt more safer. You know, my dear friend Chachi, Problem, he's from an area in Compton, the west side of Compton, by a high school, by Centennial High, where him and Kendrick went to school together and everything. So he's from an area of Compton that maybe on the news and everything is crazy, and it has been a lot of crazy where he's from. But every time I went over there, it was so much love. even with the most aggressive guys living across the street that you may have heard about doing the craziest dirt, everybody's doors was open. They was walking back and forth in each other's homes, feeding each other and talking to each other. No matter where you was from, if you came to the Problem House on that block, you were warmed and welcome. We come from a different side. We come from the Crenshaw District. Me, my friend Big D, we all spend time at Problem House. So it's a warm thing in Compton. Fast forward that, me knowing the history, me always having a place in my heart for the city of Compton. When I had a time to work, when the opportunity presented itself for me to even start working with Kendrick at such a young age before anything, it was my duty to work for a Compton artist. I have to. You know, so working with Kendrick from that angle, I understand Kendrick's angle. Why? Because I love jazz. Another thing, I know the history of Compton. Some of the most intelligent children come out of Compton, California. All my friends graduated. Even the ruthless ones graduated, you know. Smart people, two-parent households, everything. Just dealt with a different circumstance and a different hand in life at a different time and had to make different choices. But intelligent, integrity, family values is Compton, California.
You're listening to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. I'm talking with Terrace Martin. He's a musician and producer. He's got credits on a bunch of hip-hop and jazz records, including Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly.
I want to play a song from To Pimp a Butterfly that I love. Another one that definitely rattles the station wagon. And it's one that you worked on called King Kunta.
Oh, word.
I got a bone to pick. I don't want you monkey mouth, cause sitting in my throne again. I'm mad, but I ain't stressing. True friends, one question. Where you and I was walking, now I run a game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. Kunta, black man taking no losses.
Oh, yeah.
Where you and I was walking, now I run a game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. When you got the yams.
Is playing bass on that, how Battle Cat and DJ Quick would play bass on the keyboard. That's LA. The musician is copying the producer.
You have a new group called the Polyseeds.
Yep.
They are, you know, the core elements of this group are some of the best jazz musicians you know.
Yes.
It's not a straight jazz record.
Oh.
What did you want to make? Why did you want to make this? Because you know, you came out with a solo record a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. What's different about this?
The difference with this record is, A, it's not a Terrace Martin solo record. It's a collective record of a group of artists together that had an individual look and an individual, when I mean look, I should say individual outlook. They all look at life different. And an individual sound that I could recognize without saying you sound like this person or that person. And put a group together, bad mother, put them in the studio and cut a mic on and have some good alkaline water, some great medical cannabis because my back hurts, and good vibes and good people. And I wanted to assemble some that not only represented great music, but also represent the world, which is just really, people say it, I can't say it enough, but peace is a big thing. Peace is a big thing for all over the world and for neighborhoods around the world as well, especially places like Chicago. So I wanted to do a project with these kind of people that understood struggle and also understood that we have to try to put a Band-Aid on this thing called hate, on this thing called, you know, stress. Only way I do that is to make people dance and just forget about that moment, you know. And I assembled the right team of musicians and producers, Trevor Lawrence, Brandon Eugene Owens, Robert Spud Seawright, Robert Glasper, you know, me, myself, and the vocalists and the writers on here really would stand out to me. Like you have Rose Gold from Baltimore. She's also on Velvet Portraits. She travels with me, writes amazing. You have Wyan Vaughn, which is my writing partner since my career started, which is her mother's Wanda Vaughn of the Emotions. Her father's Wayne Vaughn, wrote Let's Groove and all these great songs. And she's a teacher to teach kids, so she has a different mindset when she writes. And then you have Chachi, which is an artist, also goes by the name of Problem. Chachi on here is showcasing this songwriting, vocal production, and everything else. And we have a new song called Intentions out that we just shot the short film for. I'm excited for everybody to see it.
It seems like you're very deeply invested in this musical community in L.A. Like, that's the thing that, you know, when you hear about somebody coming out of L.A.,
you always hear, oh, you know, and they've been working with Terrace Martin and mm-hmm. they're part of that whole Terrace Martin thing. Mm-hmm. That you've gotten to the point in your career where you can be a leader in tying these people together, whether they're coming from jazz or hip hop or mm-hmm. R&B or anywhere else.
Yes. That's the goal. And doing interviews like this really like, and I don't give a f- about toot nobody's horn. This is how I feel about this interview right here, particularly. I did my research and these interviews really matter. I don't do a lot of these because I don't want a lot of these out, because these are time where I could really be. Usually when I get called by something like this, I know that the person about to interview me, let me look them up because I know they on some other This ain't no bull. They gonna ask the real question. They gonna know what color drawers my mama got on. Let me get my right. These interviews help me get my message to everybody, because in the hood, we know what's up in the hood. These interviews help me and my community gang allies for help. For help, whether it be schools that need instruments or people that just need a word, or I just want to bring awareness to different things. That's why I only do a few things. And these are, every time I do these things, they stretch to somebody that I needed to stretch to. You know, thank you, man. I love doing these. And everybody else, we love everybody else. But the word is this. If you see a musician on the street playing an instrument, if you don't have nothing to give them, just tell them thank you. Thank you goes a long way. If it's a live show in your city, just go see the live musicians. If it's any good record that you want to sing and that you want to go and that you want to feel good about, sing that motherfucker. I asked YG, I said, man, you be going hard when I first started working with him. He said, T, I go hard because people get up going to work every morning, can't go hard. They can't say, fuck my motherfucking boss. I hate my boss. My boss can fuck my his wife, everything about my motherfucking boss. You can't say that. YG can. You can drive, get it out, and go on your job and feed your motherfucking family. That's a real artist. A real artist's job is to be the voice that somebody can't be in my world. So anybody supporting that, I'm with. And thank you again for your time.
Terrace Martin, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Man, thank you so much. I appreciate it too.
Terrace Martin from 2017. Let's go out on one more song from him, a track from the Polyseeds album, Sounds of Crenshaw, Volume 1. This is Intentions. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. I have had to segregate my dogs. One of them was bothering the other one too much, so now I have an upstairs dog and a downstairs dog. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer is Kevin Ferguson. Jesus Ambrosio and Jordan Cowling are our associate producers. We get help from Casey O'Brien. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is by The Go Team. Thanks to them and their label Memphis Industries for sharing it. You can also keep up with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. We post all our interviews there. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.